Oh, hi, and welcome to another episode of the Westmarch Workshop. We've got a few things to go through and talk about. I had a pretty light couple of weeks, you know, so I was just gonna generally go and talk about like my weeks in gaming, some of my experiences with Immortal, but then today we got some news. And yep, as you probably already guessed by the title, you know, of this episode, BlizzCon's canceled. And so here we are with episode 210. It's really starting to get up there. BlizzCon's canceled. Yeah, we've got a couple of things with which to go through, discuss, chat about. Obviously, we've got the topic of the episode. BlizzCon, you know, has been officially postponed for yet again another year. With a, you know, online replacement put in its place with some interesting little caveats. I continue to go through and play Immortal, and so I'd like to go through and share my continued experiences, you know, since the last episode, some of the things that I've learned, and, you know, some of the things that, you know, I'm kind of like learning as playing the game that I can at least pass on to new players or potential players that might be looking in to get into it as we get closer and closer to the release of the title. I also am going to be talking a little bit about my experiences with kind of like balancing like real life and video games that, you know, Immortal has kind of at least helped with a little bit. And, you know, we also have some theories on Diablo 3 to go and round out the episode. And I said those like in a bad order, because it's not even the opposite order of the things that I actually have on my show notes. So try to go off the top of my head, and I then look over at the show notes, and it's like, that's not the order that those things are in. So you'll have to forgive the little bit of the incorrect breakdown there. Yeah, at the top of it, you know, since the last episode, there have been, I guess, some minor changes that you may notice if you're here live on Twitch or catching the YouTube version of the episode. I got a haircut. It has been quite some time, because the last time I got my haircut was actually, like, the, October before BlizzCon 2019. You know, that was, and I went out there even early, so it was, like, mid-October of 2019 was the last time that, Clippers had, touched, something, you know, I guess besides my face, since I do trim my beard. But yeah, it, gosh, my head is a couple pounds lighter, and, it feels good. It's definitely nice, especially going into a Floridian summer. It helps. And I didn't want to get my hair out that long again in the first place. Oddly enough, the short hair has grown on me. That doesn't sound right. But it has over the last few years. It is I've been enjoying the short hair look, as well as enjoying the lack of maintenance that it requires. Just get out of bed, put some stuff in your hair, and then boom, you're done. But going on into, you know, my weeks in gaming, it's mostly been Diablo Immortal, and I'll be, you know, going into a little bit further detail with that later on in the show. But just to continue to hammer it in, and I hope that you all will still continue listening to the show, because I will run out of things to talk about Diablo Immortal eventually, but it's the new hotness, it's the big title, it's the thing that we're going through and being able to play until we get around to the next phase of testing, you know, for Diablo 2, which we talked about in episode 209, that, you know, there's a dev build that went through and got pushed. And stuff like that. So there's been some updates and things going on in the background, and it's not going to be the end all. And eventually, this phase of the alpha testing will end, and we'll carry on. But until then, it's been going through and filling a niche, you know, for just having a really good game to sink tons of hours into. But I wanted to start off with just something that I've been reflecting on in like the past couple of weeks. Is just having that balance in life between gaming and other things. You know, up until, you know, the beginning of April, I was still heavily into World of Warcraft. I was thoroughly enjoying World of Warcraft. We had stopped trying to progress mythics, and we were just doing heroics, and we had a whole new raid team, and we were having trouble with Syrah Darnathus, as was a really big difficulty check for a lot of guilds, you know, in the beginning of Shadowlands, and even still now to today, that heroic Syrah Darnathus is just a bitch, without putting it, you know, any other way. It's hard. And even for guilds like ours that were able to go through and clear it, trying to re-clear it again was dedicating an entire evening to wiping something that we had already downed multiple times. You know, we're a month past the time that we had killed it. We're only on kill number 4, and we're still taking an entire night to try and down it because of just the level of precision to get out of it. And the kind of jacked up gear reward system that exists in the beginning of Shadowlands. But, you know, that's fine. We got people AOTC, and we're going through, we're gearing up alts, where it's like, all our focus is now on 9.1. We want to get people at least geared up to a moderate level, you know, like 213 item level, stuff like that. So that way you're set, you're ready, your alt's geared, and then you can play a new class or a new spec in 9.1, and it can be fresh and fun for everybody again. But then, you know, the beginning of April, my mom died, you know, and so that kind of like threw everything up in a tizzy, and all of a sudden I went from playing WoW religiously every single day to not having time to play WoW at all. And it was like a clean break, and like I said, I was enjoying World of Warcraft, but I guess I didn't really miss it. It's so strange, it's a very odd feeling, and I just did not miss because of all the free time that I had gained. Once life began to slow down and normalize a little bit, I, you know, just had more time to do things. Because beforehand, it was like, go through, get home from work, you know, maybe take an early shower, hop on World of Warcraft, try and go through, knock out, you know, like the Covenant dailies and a whole bunch of stuff. Neve gets home, spend a little bit of time with her, go back to World of Warcraft until, you know, it's time to go through, make dinner, eat dinner, maybe like watch an episode of Netflix or something like that, and then go back to World of Warcraft. Try and get off of WoW by like 11 o'clock, sometimes get sucked into like midnight, and then just wake up tired the next day, rinse and repeat. You know, but like, you know, it's, to gamers, that's not anything different, right? As you have like your games or the time that you dedicate to the games and such, but it just meant that, you know, I wasn't having as much, I wasn't, you know, dedicating a lot of time to Diablo 3. As I had said in many of the episodes in the early part of the year, it's like, man, I really need to get on that, I need to get on this season and finish up Guardian, so don't I? Which, oddly enough, here we are in this position that I still have to do that. I've got to level 70. You know, because of course, you know, the timing of all the life events happening, which, because what else was happened on April 2nd? The new Diablo season, right? So that was, that's something that I just have not had the time to get around to doing, and mostly this time because of Immortal, so at least I'm cheating on Diablo 3 with another Diablo game for this season. I hope you'll forgive me for that, even if it is on a phone. But the free time now, and so I can come home, you know, play a little. It's like my gaming time doesn't even start there. It's like after I get up in the morning, you know, I generally have around a 40 minute commute on average to work in the morning, and you know waiting time and stuff like that between like the Uber and all the other types of stuff. And so I will start my day with a bunch of, you know, Immortal dailies, going through doing bounties and stuff like that. And then during my lunch break, I might go through and play a little bit of Immortal. Or, you know, if, say, I'm updating a projector and it takes 20 minutes for it to, you know, load an update or download a log file or recopy something, and there's nothing else that I can do and I'm just waiting, and sure, I'll sneak the phone on and go and do a bounty or something along those lines, just fill in some time, you know. So I actually get, you know, maybe like a good hour and a half of playtime in, you know, before I even, you know, get home. And, you know, so once I actually do get home, I can relax for a little bit, you know. I maybe make a you know, like a snack, or I can sit back and read. Maybe, depending upon like Neve's work schedule, I can catch up on some TV, you know, for some shows that like she doesn't want to watch, or some shows that she wanted to watch and I started without her, so I can't watch the episodes that I'm on because she hasn't caught up to that point yet. You know, and then, you know, like just kind of like pick up Immortal, finish off my dailies and stuff like that, check off certain tasks. And then, as I've mentioned, and especially if you've been following me on Twitter, I'm preparing for a Warhammer 40k tournament in a couple weeks, and I have to get 2,000 points of my army up and painted. And I actually did the painting stream, you know, this just recently. That, you know, I went through, got what was it? Got, you know, some of my destroyers painted and stuff like that, but I haven't even been able to dedicate all that much time to Immortal because I've had these other projects and hobbies, you know, to go through and work on. And if I was, say, playing World of Warcraft, which is an even bigger time sink, like Immortal still has those MMO aspects that there's certain things that you have to do every day, and I'll be talking about that in my Immortal experiences later. But like WoW was just like you had like travel times and you had to wait and things were camped and all sorts of stuff that it just it felt like a far more drag when going through and then comparing it with another MMO style system in a different game that just also happens to be made by Blizzard. And so it's like one of those things that Immortal is definitely fitting my speed a hell of a lot better at the moment. And while I was going through and getting ready for this episode, Blizzard dropped some other news for World of Warcraft that I was kind of looking forward to 9.1. I haven't liked everything that I've been seeing in the changes that they've made to 9.1. Some of the class balance changes have had me kind of like scratching my head. Some of the other design choices is just like, you know, like, okay, let's replace Soul Ash with Soul Ash 2. Stop trying to make Torghast work. It doesn't work. If people aren't finding it fun, don't make it even more mandatory than it already is. You're not giving alts catch-up mechanics. You're not giving off-specs catch-up mechanics. Like, these are the things that the player base is asking for, and you're not relenting on it. But hey, we got 40 more Covenant ranks to grind through. Am I right? But today was kind of like one of those, like, almost deal-breakers. Where they made the Keystone Master, which in the previous iterations of World of Warcraft, you had to get a Mythic Plus level 15 key, you know, which is a decently high level. You probably say, like, that's like, it's like Greater Rift, like 120 or something like that. You know, it's something that pretty much every class and every spec can attain, some easier than others, but everyone can do it, and it's not the highest difficulty that there is. Or you could still obviously push up to 150, just as many people pushed up like 24s, 26s, or something like that for Mythic Pluses, but it's a very good set difficulty that pretty much anyone can accomplish with enough work. You know, you can just put in the time and the effort, eventually you'll get there. And yeah, you know, some dungeons are easier than others. Sanguine Depths may be burned to the ground. But all you had to do was clear it on a 15. You could find a mythic combination that allowed you to do it easier than others. And so you just kind of like, oh, well, we just have Sanguine Depths. Looks like we're waiting another 3 weeks before we get that 15 done. And then it's just going to be easy peasy, lemon squeezy. Now, you have to complete the dungeon on Fortified, which buffs all of the non-boss mobs, and Tyrannical, which buffs all of the boss mobs. So you have to do two separate 15 clears on all of these dungeons in order to do it. In certain ones, especially Sanguine Depths, is just hellacious on both Fortified and Tyrannical. You know, it's kind of like, you know, there's some that are easy, like Necrotic Wake has so many bosses, like doing that one on Tyrannical is a pain. It's much easier to do on like Fortified, even though it's still kind of painful on Fortified. Plaguefall is another one that is like, it's so easy, you know, on Fortified, but it is such a pain on Tyrannical. And then having to go through and do it on both, like, ew! Disgusting. And it's just because it's like a combination of like now that they're moving on instead of just like having the straight 15 clear, or they're using the Raider IO system that's being built directly into the game, and it gives you kind of like the stylized rating system. But it's not just the rating, it's like a combined rating total of doing it on both Fortified and Tyrannical, and it meshes those two numbers to give together to give you like this formula for doing it. So maybe you don't have to do both on a 15, you know, maybe you can do like a Fortified on a 17 and then the Tyrannical on a 14 and get a pass through on it. But it's just, why, Blizzard, why are you making the game more difficult and not any more rewarding? By actually, in essence, by making it more difficult, it is in fact less rewarding. And because the reward on it is also just a new, not even a new mount, it's just a reskin of the season one mount. It's like, why? You can't even go through the effort of, you make this convoluted system that, sure, people asked for Raider IO being built into the game, but nobody asked for having this combo score of Tyrannical and Fortified. Just, like, do you want people to play Final Fantasy XIV? Because that's what I'm hearing. You actively want the player base to play other games besides World of Warcraft. Like, I get Burning Crusade Classic is launching, but you don't have to scavenge the player base from Shadowlands to get people to play it. You know, I'm okay. I ranted a little bit heavier in the pre-show, so you can like hop onto Twitch and catch the VOD on that one. It caught me off guard. It definitely caught me off guard. And I was not happy. Not happy at all. But to move on to things that are more Diablo related, as well as things that do cause happiness. Immortal. You know, it's kind of been the talk of the last couple of episodes. And, well, that's because it's been the main game that I've been going through and playing. And I'm sure if you've been paying attention to, like, a lot of the other content creators, most of the top streamers are also still playing Diablo Immortal. Not everybody is. Some people have already gone back to Diablo 3 or Path of Exile or, you know, variety streaming and such. Because they kind of, like, did the content and they're tired of it. You know, maybe it's just it's not for them, or they're waiting for more. Cause since this game is, this testing is more focused on like the kind of like the PvP aspects, we still don't have the entire game. We don't have the last level. We don't have the level 60. We don't have the actual PvE version of in-game content is not there, you know, that I expect, because there's still one like missing tab in the player screen. So there's a lot of stuff that I imagine that isn't there. But even, you know, barring that, I've still been enjoying it because it's still kind of like progressing my character. I'm still, even at this point, finding gear upgrades. You know, it's occasionally, it's definitely slowed down. Maybe like one piece a week do I find something that is either just slightly better stat allocations or just more stats in general. But some of the things that have been keeping me going, and at least some information that I want to pass on to anybody that might happen to get into the technical alpha. I think the last giveaway was just like Monday, or was it last week Monday? It was like one of the last giveaways of going through and getting people into the alpha. I have been seeing a lot more new people this past week. But some of the information that I can at least pass on that would still maintain relevancy, even, you know, a year from now, once you go through and get into the game, is when I'm going and playing, I have three main goals. Two daily goals and one weekly goal. Now, the two daily goals, the first one is doing all of my bounties. And so that's the thing that I will generally get done during the commute back and forth to work. It takes between an hour to about an hour and a half to do all of them, depending. Some of them are more grindy than others, particularly like, because you'll have some bounties or just go to this area and kill 60 monsters. Some will be go to this area and kill 20 of this very specific monster that's only like one per pack. those can take a while, or ones that might be collect 10 of this random drop from a monster, and you can just hit dry streaks. You know, I much prefer the one that's just like, hey, kill 60 monsters in this area, because you like do a loop in like a minute and you're done. You know, it goes very fast, very quick. Some of the other ones take a little bit more time. And then also, say, if you get, you know, like, the Mad King dungeon, because you always get two dungeons every day. If you get the Mad King dungeon versus the Rapids, you know, one takes about 3 minutes. The other one, unfortunately, because you're on a timed ride down the river, there's no way to speed it up. It takes about 6 minutes to finish. So it can be annoying if you get a bad spread of dungeons. And so that's the first thing that I always do, is to finish out all of my dailies. It gives you a decent amount of experience. It gives you a decent amount of some crafting materials. You got some currency with honor. You got some currency with platinum. You get an assortment of different items. You know, they at least give you some crafting materials. You get a decent amount of gold. But the big thing is you get Scoria, which is your system for upgrading your Heliquary. And the Heliquary itself is something that's just kind of like a base stat progression that every level just gives you offense and defense rating. As we talked about in previous episodes, offense and defense rating is the singular best stat for increasing the power level of your character to do more challenging content, to just increase your power level, you know, or to give you an upper edge in PvP. Before, it looked as if the offense and defense ratings were normalized in PvP based on the tooltips. In actuality, whether it's intended or not, that's not the case. So you do want higher offense and defense ratings when you get into PvP. In the beginning, it wasn't too bad. I was only like 30 Paragon levels behind and just a couple of upgrades on my gear. Now that I'm like 1,500 offense defense rating behind the blasters, I'm having a far more difficult time in PvP. Still fun and entertaining, but the teams can get very skewed by having, you know, three blasters on one side and only one on your other. There's no real winning those matches anymore. But the Scoria is something that you want to max out every single day. For a Shadow and an Immortal, if you're participating in the Cycle of Strife, you can only get the 6 per day or the 12 per day from completing your bounties. If you're an adventurer and not partaking in the Cycle of Strife, you get a hell of a lot more, both through just being able to purchase it for like the in-game currency honor. That's not the purchasable one. You have to play the game to get honor. But you get honor that you can purchase it. Shadows and Immortals cannot buy that. And you also are given a special weekly quest that just got added into the game like last week that unlocks even more Scoria, like vast amounts more Scoria for doing dailies and things like that. So it is now rather rewarding to be an adventurer at the cost of doing extra content. When I was a Shadow beforehand, it was nice because you got some these contracts that you could go and experience, like these little story-based systems. You could do, I think it's 9 a week. You start off with 3 on Monday, and you get a new one every day of the week. So you're able to go through and, you know, do all of those. I guess, yeah, it's 9. It's 3 plus 6, 9. Yeah, I can do math. I just had to test myself. But they're like little story elements, like finding the spear of Cassia, you know, from the face of Mount Ariat in like a daring raid in an immortal storehouse and such. And it was really cool experiencing that and having these little tidbits of having like root out spies. Some of them you had to run dungeons, some of them you just had to kill people, some you're like having like Assassin's Creed follow this person through Westmarch. It was a lot of varied gameplay and it was fun. You had a separate kind of like Greater Rift system, which was more of like kind of like the old trial rift, from early Reaper of Souls, because it's just like, oh, there's like 5 mobs and an elite mob, kill them all, you have a minute, you know, ever scaling difficulty, which is a nice like little subsystem. And then you could raid the vault, which wasn't as appealing because we didn't have immortals to play against. We only had NPCs and they were pushovers. But then now going and becoming an immortal, it leads me to my secondary goal, for the day is to finish up all of my immortal daily goals. And now the immortals have a different system from shadows, whereas they don't have these contracts with story elements. It's literally do a bounty, upgrade gear, socket a gem. It's things that you would do to progress and level up your character. You're salvaging gear, you know, in order to get crafting materials. You're upgrading your gear to increase your power level. You're upgrading your gems to increase your power level. You're running a challenge rift to get more crafting materials to upgrade your gear. You know, you're gaining a paragon level because you're out there and gaining experience. You know, you're doing Keon's ordeal in order to, progress the actual immortal age and the overall power level of kind of like the guild clan, as it were. So it's a bunch of stuff that you just, that the game wants you do to ever increase your power level within the game. But there's no added story elements to it. There's nothing. I was holding off on some of my opinions, even though, you know, I had a kind of a pretty negative view of the cycle of strife in the Immortal Shadow story as a whole. I won't go over it yet again in this episode. We'll save that for probably next week. But even going into Kion's ordeal, it was nothing. It's like walk through this door and go fight these four bosses. No trash mobs, nothing that you would associate with a raid in, you know, most MMOs. You know, it literally is just go run and do this. That was it. And it's a 48 player raid, and I think we've done it with only like 17 people, even on like the second difficulty that we've now unlocked. And it's just, it ain't hard. The rewards are pretty random and very lackluster as well, but you know, it's just, it's an extra piece of content to go through and do. I can't figure out which side I have to. I like just got my haircut on Saturday, so you have to forgive me. I don't know which way to part my hair. But yeah, you know, and so going through and doing like those immortal dailies, which generally align up with doing, you know, all of your bounties. You might have to do like one extra dungeon at the end of the day, because the immortal dailies will always give you two dungeons, and they don't always line up with the dungeons that you get from your bounties. You can like re-roll them a little bit to try and fish for it. But you don't always luck out. So sometimes, you know, I'm having to do an extra dungeon or two. It's like, oh, 10 minutes of extra content. Except when you have to do Battlegrounds. Battlegrounds is something that's been a little bit problematic. Mostly, like I mentioned a little bit earlier, like PvP balance is like really off between people that, like myself, that are only like Paragon 47 versus people that are Paragon 160. There is no contest. I mean, as there should be, you know, but it isn't really fun just getting one shot. And there are also just some problematic mechanics in the game. You know, I get killed from off-screen by people that I can't even see very regularly because of the casting range. If you have a different size phone, you can actually see more of the game. And so I've been killed off-screen. And sometimes the animations for the attacks, because they're so far off-screen, don't even load. So I get killed by a multi-shot that I didn't even see the projectiles for. Barbarians have a skill that they are immune to dying for 6 seconds. So it's like, it doesn't matter. Like if you go through and you hit a barbarian that's lower level than you, and you drop him from 100 to 0, as long as he hit that button, can't kill him for 6 seconds. He actually has a chance to go back and kill you. Not very fun. Crusaders also can do the same for 3 seconds because they get 3 seconds immunity. But yeah, 6 seconds of just having a barbarian at 0% life. Not the funnest. Not very engaging gameplay, I must say. Yeah. And you know, through going through and making sure that I got those daily things done, basically leads me into my weekly goal. And so now my one weekly goal that I have is maxing out my battle pass. Now the battle pass is a system where as you, you know, do certain things in the game, run dungeons, participate in battlegrounds, raid or defend the vault, you know, go out, kill mobs and get pieces of the Herodric Tome, you know, to unlock new pages at the altar. you know, complete Elder Rifts, things like that. All these various things that you do reward you kind of like these battle points that you then level up your battle pass. Now, everybody gets a battle pass. There's a free one and a paid one. And the paid one has been disabled for both this closed alpha and the previous technical alpha. Though in the technical alpha, we could actually see the rewards. In the closed alpha, we cannot see what the rewards are on the paid track. But on the free track, you get a lot of good things. You get a couple of legendary gems, you get an actual legendary piece, a lot of crafting materials, you get charms for going and like having another avenue to increase like skill ranks, you get crests, a legendary crest, you get honor, so that way you can buy things at the honor vendor. You know, there's a lot of really good rewards. And we saw, at least in the technical alpha, that generally the paid track was just more of the same or a little bit better. So, like, if you were getting four charms in the regular track, you got four charms in the paid track. Or you got a rare crest for Elder Rifts on the regular track, you got a legendary crest, you know, in the paid track. And so it's one of those that it does indirectly give additional player power by increasing the gains that you get within the game. So it's pay to progress faster, but you're still having to play the game. There is a cap on the amount of battle points that you can collect throughout the week, and my goal weekly is to max out that XP. Because every time that you unlock a new rank in the Battle Pass is also a huge boost of XP, which helps with granting your Paragon levels, regardless of what the rewards are. You know, and it's also one of those ones that's just a good metric of making sure that you're maximizing your rewards. Because you have 40 ranks on the Battle Pass, and then you kind of have like 20 prestige ranks after that, as we found out this week from some of the blasters that are hitting the actual cap. Is that you can only kind of like max out the battle pass, like kind of like those chests of renown, an additional 20 times afterwards. And, you know, so they kind of like are maxed for the rest of the month, you know, which is only a couple more days. But it is one of those things that it's like, it's good to at least try and max that out. I think I will probably at least hit it by like Saturday, Sunday at the rate that I'm going. Cause I am still capping. Like I said, there's a cap on the weekly progression, but the blasters, because the month rolled over on, you know, part of the way through the week, it also reset that cap. And so they had a couple days head start. Whereas I, out of that 2,500, you know, weekly cap of the battle points, I only got like 1,000. They fully capped it, so like I'm 1,500 behind, maybe 2,000 behind because I missed the cap last week. That it, you know, it gives me a goal that if I can do this, I'm maxing out, you know, my experience that I can gain from the battle pass, maxing out the crafting materials that I get from those renowns, and so it's things that is just like to make sure that you're not like falling behind other players, but also these are rewards that are just given to you for playing. And, you know, I'm not blasting. I probably am only averaging maybe 3 or 4 hours of gameplay a day. It's a lot better than what I was doing with World of Warcraft. And it's broken up because about almost half of my playtime is just during my commute or like during my lunch break, you know, or other various breaks that I have during the day. I can break it up because of the fact that it's a mobile game, and I definitely see, you know, what, you know, Echo, who I've had on the show before, was really getting into, like, with the whole big thing on mobile gaming, is that it's, like, it's an experience I can take with me. You know, it's, like, I need 60 more battle points before the day goes. You know what? I'm, like, really tired. I'm just gonna try and run, you know, Leoric's Dungeon, like, 3 more times in bed, you know? You know, I've already, like, tucked myself in for the night, and it's just, like, I can either browse, you know, Twitter or Reddit or Discord for another, like, 15 minutes, or I could just, like, run a dungeon a couple more times. Like, easy choice, right? You know, so it's just, it's nice because it's able to break up my play experience, or the time that I get to dedicate to the game. Well, you know, like, if this wasn't on mobile, was instead on PC, I would have to shuffle around a lot of my priorities and stuff, you know, from like watching TV shows with my girlfriend, you know, just like spending, you know, hanging out. I can play Immortal sitting on the couch while she's playing Kingdom Hearts. You know, she started a new playthrough of Kingdom Hearts 2. You know, I spent a couple hours just chilling on the couch, watching her play and chatting with her. You know, it's just, it's cool. It's nice, just from that aspect. And it has loads of fulfilling gameplay. You have people that have been blasting the game for like 60 hours a week for over a month now, and they're still not tired of it yet. You know, some of the highest end blasters in the Diablo community have been loving everything that's in this game, and we don't even have the full game yet. I think that should be pretty telling. And I think that you too, if you're still listening at this point, you too will enjoy this game when it comes out, no matter how heavy you go into it. You can, you know, if you, you know, still choose Diablo 4 or Diablo 2 Resurrected over Immortal, that's fine. It'll be waiting for you. It's something that you can play on the can. It's something you can play as you go to bed, or, you know, when you're just waiting, you know, for a doctor's appointment or something like that. You can put a little bit of time in with Diablo Immortal, and there's meaningful progression to be had in these small little play chunks through the bounties, the daily missions from being a shadow or an immortal, and whatever else they come out with the game. It's been a lot of fun, and it's something that I think would be really good. I do want to acknowledge the Battle Pass one more time, because it's one of like the Blizzard's core philosophies. Is like they have three main ways of monetizing the game. It's going to be like cosmetics, I think. It was cosmetics, the Battle Pass, and then like the legendary gem system, which is, you know, you have to purchase legendary crests to get them in the Elder Rifts, you know, through paid currency. In order to craft legendary gems, you have to pay with platinum, which you get a very small amount from your dailies, but you generally are just going to have to buy with real money, you know, at the level that they want them for. The high end, like doing, if you're like really blasting on charms, you don't get enough per day to do it. And so that's another one that you kind of have to pay for platinum, as well as the reforged stones. You can buy reforged stones for honor, but if you want targeted reforges, you have to pay real money for. So those are kind of like the systems that you have to purchase, you know, and pay money for. And I think one of the biggest ones might end up being the Battle Pass, you know, just with how lucrative some of those rewards are for those first 40 levels. And then after you max those 40 levels, remaining kind of like 20 prestige levels, it's, I believe, the same, because there's no more paid track. So it's the same for everybody. And so you kind of like normalize out a little bit there at the back end, if you're like heavily blasting into it. And this is something I've talked with, you know, Echo and Captain Nemo a little bit. And, you know, they estimate it's probably going to be somewhere between like $5 to $15 a month. You know, so that's like, it's an MMO subscription. And that's something Star Trek Online, Elder Scrolls Online, the Old Republic, they all, you know, you can play the game without a subscription fee, but, you know, you have to pay the subscription fee for like some, you know, better cosmetic effects and stuff. Some are better than others. Like, you don't have like auto attacks in the Old Republic unless you have a subscription, so you have to hit the auto swing. You know, that's pretty shitty, you know. You know, and so there's varying levels of way that they've done it. And, you know, maybe we haven't seen the in-game. We haven't seen in-game raids and stuff like that yet in Immortal. So I won't, you know, but as of the content that we're given as of right now, I think maybe 15 is a little bit too much. You know, I think 10 would be like a nice break point. You know, that's like two Twitch subscriptions, $10 a month. It really isn't that bad. Could easily, you know, through and throw that away, you know, towards it, especially if like maybe you got like some platinum rewards out of it, you know, or some extra reforged stones or just something else, you know, that you can kind of like get your money's worth, you know, from it. or at least you get some of that, like, money back. It was like in Star Trek Online, if you pay like the $15 like monthly subscription, you basically get $5 back in in-game currency every month, you know. So it's like it kind of like it's like a thank you. You get a whole bunch of perks and benefits, but they also is just like that five of those dollars that you spent are going directly into like things that you can use to purchase new ships and such. So that would be cool if we got you know, some allotment of Eternal Orbs or Platinum or something else, you know, from the paid track of the Battle Pass to get some of that money back, while still, of course, requiring you to play the game. You know, and that's the big thing, that it doesn't matter if you paid your $15, if you don't play the game, you're not getting any of the rewards. So it still is, you can buy all the legendary crests that you want, and get like your maxed out level 5 gems and all those other types of stuff to like go through and give you a leg up, you know, in terms of like your player power, you know. But if you can't just buy 100 legendary gems, you have to run 100 Elder Rifts, and Elder Rifts are not very rewarding outside of those legendary gems. You're not getting a lot of experience, you're getting next to nothing in terms of crafting mats. So if you're dedicating days of your time to nothing but Elder Rifts, the only thing you're getting are legendary gems. You're not leveling up your gear. You're barely leveling your Paragon levels in order to go through and get it up to where, sure, I've got maxed out level 5 gems across the board, and I've got some really cool bonuses and all of that compared to other players, but I'm also, like, you know, 20 Paragon levels behind, and, you know, all of my gear is, like, 4 or 5, you know, upgrade levels behind, so I'm nowhere near what these other people are in terms of their progression. And so I think that the system is really well done. You know, we still have to wait until we see it all in fully, because we don't have the cosmetics or anything like that, but from what I've seen so far, I think it's been really well done. And because everything requires you to play the game. There is nothing in the game that you can just, like, straight up pay for and get power out of it. You have to play. You just straight up have to play in order to go through and get your rewards and such. But yeah, that's kind of been, you know, like my experiences with Immortal, you know, over the last couple of weeks. I'm still disappointed in that Cycle of Strife story. Still, I was hoping that there would be some extra tidbits in Keon's ordeal, and there was nothing. So I've got to type up that feedback for Blizzard. Sorry, but no, sir, I don't like it. I enjoy almost everything else in the game besides Scargoth. Because it just breaks the rest of the lore of the franchise. But, you know, that'll be a topic. I've already talked about that on previous episodes, and we'll talk about it again at some point, I'm sure. But yeah, it's the show title, so might as well talk about it. Yeah, we got the sad news today that BlizzCon has been postponed for yet another year. So, you know, it came about earlier today, and this is something that, you know, I've talked about at least a couple of times, that my expectation was there's probably no BlizzCon this year. And, yep, they announced it today, there will be no in-person BlizzCon in 2021. And they will do much akin to what they did with this past year, is that they said that, in the meantime, we're planning a global event for the early part of next year, combining an online show along the lines of our recent BlizzConline with smaller in-person gatherings that we'll shore more of for our plans to come together. So that one, that little caveat there, was pretty interesting, because obviously, there's still a global pandemic going on. There are still, you know, even just here in Florida, it's some of our lowest rates, you know, in like the past year, but still, like, we're getting over 1,000 cases a day, and people are still dying from this disease. That it probably is best to not have people from all over the world going and traveling. You know, it is It's also one of those, like, say, Niamh's family has been trying to plan a trip to Ireland, but like Ireland is like one of the heftiest lockdowns in all of the EU. Traveling in the EU is just really difficult. A lot of places, even if they have travel open, you have to quarantine for 2 weeks. And so, like, what? I want to spend a week in Germany, to see some friends, or a week in the Netherlands to see some family. I have to plan a 3 week vacation. And then, like, they haven't updated our COVID policy at work. So if I leave the country and come back, I have to quarantine for at least 48 hours to see if I develop symptoms. It's like so strange. Or like in Neve's work, she has to quarantine for 2 weeks. Even though she's gotten the vaccine, I've gotten the vaccine, but it's just like that's what the work policy is. And it's just like, so we've taken like a month and a half off to spend a week in Europe. Like that doesn't track. That's going nowhere fast. So it's just it can be really difficult, and not everyone might be able to participate in BlizzCon if they were to hold it in person. Other people just might not feel safe. There is at least still a small chance that people that are vaccinated could catch the disease. And obviously, there's issues where if vaccinated people do get the disease, that variant, it could pass on to others, and now it is more capable of being, resistant to the series of vaccines that we've gotten, hastening its mutation and all the other types of stuff. That's just like obviously ends in not good. It's not good at all. But stupid, I can't figure out the part in the camera. So them deciding to go through and do the online only is good. That's fine. It's definitely fine. There's some talk about, oh, it's just Activision cutting costs because BlizzCon is like a huge loss. It's a marketing piece. Instead of paying like E3 to come and like have a booth and do a presentation, or Gamescom or something like that, they eat the marketing costs themselves and have the entire limelight of the show by having such a massive presentation. So it's not a loss, it's a marketing cost. They don't it's BlizzCon's not operated at a loss. It's a cost of doing business. It's budgeted in marketing. It's how you look at it. So I don't really buy too much stock into the thought that it's just like Activision cutting costs, because it kind of like saves them more money in the long run, as opposed to like trying to do presentations at big events where they're paying someone else to do it. It's just it's it I think it works out better for them as a whole, doing it the way continuing to do it the way that they do it with BlizzCon. But the part about them having smaller in-person gatherings, my first thought on that one, I shared it on Twitter earlier, was could they fly out, some of the top content creators to Blizzard headquarters? Because that's something that's easy to go through and coordinate. It's like, are you vaccinated, and does it make sense for you to travel, to California from wherever you are? And then you can make that decision where it's like, no, when I come back home, because I live in Europe, or whatever, when I come back home, I've got to quarantine for 2 weeks, and like I don't want to, waste time off on that, or so on and so forth. At least at that point, people can make like that connection, or that decision for themselves, and they can still do things like they did this year, where like Mr. Llama did a pre-recorded interview with the developers. Bloodshed did a pre-recorded interview with the developers, that they can always go and do and display on the online portion. And you've got some content creators that went over to Blizzard HQ, or maybe they do some sort of like What was it? I saw, Crow post online. You do like a bar craft where you just like have kind of like a small meetup or get together. You like do one in LA, one in New York, one in Paris, or something like that. Send out some of the devs and have like a little smaller, you know, kind of like maybe invite only gathering or something like that. That just, you know, make it give a little bit more of that community touch, that community feel. They really tried to do it with not a lot of, you know, I want to say not a lot of notice, but you did have notice, but not a lot of planning or pre-experience with doing that at like with the BlizzCon online. But they still found a great way of hitting the stride and keeping the community engaged, which is one of the biggest things about BlizzCon, is that community, that get-together element. And I think that they did it pretty good with the BlizzCon line. And if they're going to take it a step further, now that they have a little bit of experience doing that, they have a little bit more freedom of travel and social distancing and such, so that they can do that going into next year. And hopefully, you know, all things considered, we'll be somewhat back to normal, you know, in 2022, and we can have conventions, you know, without having to worry about international travel and stuff like that safely. I know different areas like Dragon Con is, you know, still happening, you know, up in Georgia, other things like that. So there are some places that are still going through and doing it, but yeah, it's everyone has their own thoughts and opinions on safety and all of that type of stuff, or costs, you know, because that, you know, at least even though I don't buy it, it is relatively valid theory, given, you know, the business handlings that we've seen. It is a potentiality there. There's definitely a potentiality. But it is sad not being able to go through and see some of my friends yet again this year. And I was hoping that maybe I'd be able to go through and like see SVR and take a trip over to Europe, but that one is, plans on that one are deteriorating rather quickly, as it is, you know, because you've got to buy tickets like 6 months in advance, and so it's like an ever-shifting window of when you want to go through and buy those tickets and do it, and eventually it's just getting like, oh, well, now we're getting into like November, December, and that's heavy travel, and the ticket prices are already astronomical, even trying to buy them so far in advance, and it's just so much higher, and it's not really worth it. And it's just like, maybe we'll plan for like summer of next year or something like that. And so some other things might come in and, you know, fill that gap. I've been, you know, going through, I have family in Calabasas, so I might still take a trip over to California. You know, I might try and go through and have a get together, you know, with some of the BlizzCon crew outside of BlizzCon and do our own like little travel meet and greet type thing. Who knows? There's still some potential there. There's still some things that we can do. You know, we'll do our own damn BlizzCon, right? But yeah, it's definitely it's a big sad, not being able to see friends and community and stuff like that. But we will one day. We will one day. And then, you know, as I mentioned, you know, at the top of the episode, I do have at least one thing to discuss when it comes to Diablo 3, and that is PTR? Maybe? Huh? Could be? Well, it's, you know, they've gotten into a rhythm, you know, current season, broke the cycle a little bit. It took a little bit longer to go through and get this one out the door, and I spent plenty of time talking about, you know, the level of the changes in the back end that would have required making the season with the follower changes, and so it's understandable. But we are hitting that 2 month mark here shortly, which is generally the time that we see, you know, our first notices of the PTR. You know, we get like, you know, well, we begin around somewhere around that 2 month mark, you know, like 9 to 10 months into it, we get our PTR notes, and like a week later we get our 2 week PTR, you know, and then like the wrap up, the end of the season, our 2 week break, and then going into the next season. And so we're at that level. So I would definitely say that maybe, you know, next week, so starting on, like, you know, the 31st of May, you know, June 1st, we're kind of at that point, you know, we're on PTR watch. We're officially on PTR watch, you know, because we might have some new content coming in for Diablo 3. Obviously, this is just my guesstimation based on looking at the development patterns over the course of, you know, the last couple of years. And it is, there's always some change. You know, sometimes it's right on the money. Sometimes, like, you know, this, the PTR for this season, it was, you know, like almost a month delayed. But it is one of those things that we continue to look out for. And we can start a nice, like, little, you know, episode section. Is the PTR here yet? No. And, ooh, something that actually just popped into my head, and I completely forgot to add to the show notes. And this was something that Watson, if you're still here in chat, I saw you typing earlier. Watson went through and sent over to me, is that there was a new development build found for Diablo 4 on the PlayStation Network. You know, this all comes down to, like, CDNs, and we talked a little bit about that with Snuggie on the last episode. You know, these content delivery networks. And just, like, Blizzard's CDNs that are kind of, like, really well figured out. The PlayStation ones are also really well figured out. And on the back end, they found an encrypted dev build that had the Diablo 4 logo associated to it. It's the only reason, because the name was, like, a code name and the other stuff like that. It was, like, be, like, Goats, I think, was the name of it. I'm trying to remember now. But, yeah, it is... It was, you know, it's kind of like snuck in there. And so development is definitely going on and continuing. We saw last summer, we had kind of like one of those first like big like development updates for that Project Fenris as Blizzard transitioned to a working from home scenario. We later came with the developer blogs for D4 that they had a department wide play test of one of the entire zones of the game. And this could very well be something very similar where they're going through and doing a play test of the game and seeing how it's running on console. You know, as the core root of the development is a PC title, they are still bringing it to consoles or controller support on the PC. Some people just prefer playing, you know, with a controller. It's more comfortable for them and such. And so, you know, it's nice seeing that there is at least continuing development and they're moving forward. And I would say getting the game, you know, running on, you know, a completely different system, i.e. a console, is a relatively big step forward that we can at least, we don't know what it means, but hell, it means something, right? So that's definitely a pretty good indicator that things are continuing to move forward with Diablo 4. And right now it's May 26th, but in a couple days it's June. So we're only, what, a maximum of 5 weeks away from the Diablo 4 developer blog? You know, this one obviously is a little bit of a longer one, but also kind of matching the content that we got last year. You know, where we got the announcement of Diablo 4 and they guaranteed us a developer blog every quarter and they pushed for that first developer blog in February instead of March. And then every subsequent one, you know, throughout the year kind of pushed it a little bit further and further towards the very end of that quarter. So even though it will have been longer than 3 months since our last developer update, since we got it in February, June is the last month in quarter two of the year, so it's not that much longer. Gosh, it really doesn't feel like it's been that long. I don't know if it's just me, you know, because obviously, you know, I'm pretty busy with work and all of that, and, well, you know, the month of April just kind of is still a blur for, you know, relatively obvious reasons for myself. But it really doesn't feel like all that long ago. It's just like, dang, it's been like, you know, 3.5 months since BlizzCon Line, and we had those last updates and talks about Diablo 4 and such. I'm looking forward to it. I'm not sure what they're going to go through and talk about in this developer blog. Did they say at BlizzCon? I can't remember. if they did or not, what was going to be coming in the next development blog. I do hope that they go and they come back, you know, because we got at least the Rogue and the PvP systems. Now we come back a little bit heavier on you know, focusing in on like their current skill iterations. That seems to be still a big topic for people in the community. Excuse me, the items and skills, kind of like that in-game stuff. So that's something that I feel as if almost should be talked about in almost every development blog, is just where are they at now. Some other things I would like to see is dungeons. I want to see these key dungeons in a little bit more detail. What do they got planned for it? What are they going to be doing with it? Will certain, you know, unique items be tied to specific dungeons? That is a little different for, you know, Diablo fans, because you know, we're not used to monsters that have specific loot tables. You know, we are used to monsters with specific loot tables because of monster level and item levels from like Diablo 2, you know, where you kill Bale because he has a chance of dropping everything in the game. You farm the pit, you know, or, you know, the like Archeon and stuff like that in Act 5 because of the high, you know, monster levels in order to go through and drop the very highest in gear, such as Wind Force and things like that. There are specific places that you can target farm those things because, well, it's the only place that that thing can even have a chance at dropping out, making them exceedingly rare. With some of these systems and having kind of like these set kind of like dungeons that are out there in the world, a thematic element to them is like, you know, say the Oryx Crown. You know, if you were going through, and this is just a hypothetical because obviously the game is taking place nowhere near Tristram, you know, in the events of Diablo 4, but might eventually go there. Say a theoretical dungeon in Diablo 4 is going back to the cathedral and killing Leoric. Wouldn't it kind of make sense for a unique item like Leoric's Crown to, if not only drop from Leoric, have a higher chance at dropping from Leoric? There's ways to go through and doing it, because it's something that kind of exists within modern RPGs that people kind of like come to expect. This is a question that you'll see asked of like top end content creators all the time, is I need item X, where does it drop? And, you know, it's like, oh, it drops from anywhere, just kill stuff. You know, wouldn't it be, you know, a little bit more elegant to say, well, it has a chance of dropping, you know, anywhere, but if you really want to target farm it, run, you know, the Cave of Blood and the Fractured Peaks or something like that, you know, because you have to kill, you know, this boss that has a higher chance of dropping it or something along those lines. You know, not completely going through and taking, like, the MMO route or the WoW route or anything like that, but, you know, it's one of those ones. If you want an SOJ, you know, you kill what? It's a regular Diablo or Nightmare Andy? You know, there are certain items that you do, like at least in, you know, Diablo 2, you can kind of pseudo-target farm because of the manipulation of the monster levels and their drop rates within the game. It's not too far out there to have a somewhat similar system in Diablo 4, at least to make it a little bit easier, especially if there's uniques and then there are still mythics, right? I'm remembering that right? I gotta have to go through and read the development blogs. I'm gonna have to reread the development blogs. I've given myself homework for the next episode, haven't I? But, you know, it's if to go through and find like certain uniques and stuff, that part of the aspect of the uniques is like they've got this affixes that you can't find anywhere else, combinations of stats that you can't find anywhere else, you know, special properties, cool unique looks, you know, and there's always that kind of like that cool lore association, you know, that story association with them that can kind of like be like, ooh, that's cool. But then there's also the meta context of those things, you know, with say Tyriel's Might. you know, being one of the rarest items in Diablo 2 to have such a, you know, mythical, you know, drop rates that it's, you know, it's just kind of like talked about and hushed whispers. It doesn't actually exist in the realms, or Godly Play to the Whale, which actually did not exist in base Diablo 1, but people talked about it. You know, it's like people would like make that shit up and put it on, you know, game facts that you can find. Oh, and Final Fantasy VI, if you fly around Kefka's Tower counterclockwise 6 times and then like hit XYZ on your controller, you can go and fight a special boss and get the Sword of Chaos. That's even better than Ragnarok or the Illumina, right? You know, everyone's seen that, right? You know, so it's like, yeah, the Godly Play to the Whale was one of those ones where it's like the item, the affixed combination put it beyond the item level that dropped in base Diablo 1. You know, so there's just some, you know, some cool little things that they could do to, one, I still feel it's a little bit more of an elegant system of being able to specifically target farm items as opposed to just kill whatever, because it also is something that Riker brought up in one of his streams, that like it's like kind of a flaw of certain ARPG designs where it's just do easier content faster than doing harder content, because it increases your chance at finding gear and it's all random, so it doesn't really matter. But if there was, you know, with early, like classic Diablo 3, vanilla Diablo 3, if you wanted some of those item level 63 pieces, those item level 63 legendaries, the all like maybe 2 of them that were actually useful and the rest were garbage, you had to farm Act 3 and Act 4. They just could not drop in Act 1 or Act 2, you know? And, you know, if they had some sort of system that was, you know, not as limiting as Diablo 3 was, because that was much akin to the issue that I have with the gearing or itemization system in World of Warcraft. Oh, you have to do, you have to complete Act 4 and farm Act 4 to get your item level 63 gear that will allow you to do Act 4. Shouldn't I be getting gear that will allow me to do Act 4 in Act 3? Why do I have to farm Act 4 to get the gear to complete Act 4? Like, that does not make sense. It is not the gear to make Act 4 easier. It's the gear to actually do the act in the first place. Because, like, farming Act 2 in old Inferno mode was pointless, because you could not find gear at a high enough item level to give you the stats necessary to then go into Act 3, especially as a melee class. You were some jank, exploitive ranged build, the wizard with energy shield, you know, or something along those lines, in order to try and hope and pray to do those higher level difficulties. And there was a certain draw to some of that. Obviously, what they ended up doing with, like, the monster power system, I felt was at least a better handling of difficulty and scaling, but you know, you have to acknowledge that the itemization system itself was a little bit broken. But if they had scaled back a little bit and just taken a look at it, is like the things that you do, if I'm going through and say taking it into modern Diablo turns, the items that I get in Torment 1 should equip me so that way I can eventually get up to Torment 6. You know, and then that should, like, theoretically give me better gear in Diablo 3 now. It just gets you gear faster. But it should, you know, maybe a system where fewer difficulties with higher jumps in between. And each one of those difficulties will just give you gear to help you set up for making the jump into the next difficulty. You know, so, you know, this unique, you know, I bring it up a lot. The Death's Web is one of those, like, item level 90 plus items that you can only get off of, like, you know, 5 sources in the entire game in Diablo 2, making it exceedingly rare. I never saw one drop naturally. You know, the few times I've had one, I traded for. It is just, you know, making something like that. Like, oh yeah, you know, it's like, if I want a chance at getting a Death's Web in Diablo 4, I am not going to see that until I run Torment 2. I can go through, beat the game, you know, on hard or whatever, and then go into, you know, or go into Nightmare mode or go into Torment 1, you know, beat that, then go into Torment 2, you know, crush that. Now I'm in Torment 3. it's unlocked some sort of plateau, and then now these higher level better uniques are unlocked to allow me to go through and progress and do higher level content, better content, and help it. Like, I've had like this plus poison damage weapon that gives me my bonuses to my poison skills. It's giving me poison damage percentages. You know, it's like a really cool, nice, like rare item that's like really focused in on poison. So I can play the build. I'm like having no problems going through and doing like that Torment 1, that Torment 2. I'm geared up. I'm progressing through Torment 3. You know, I'm getting my gear to the point where it becomes easier. And oh, look at that. I found my Death's Web. Now my poison does like obscene damage because like it has a unique property that just halves, you know, the poison resistance on mobs and such. So it's like the perfect all poison, you know, weapon for me to go through and rock on my theoretical necromancer that I hope exists in Diablo 4. But it just, you know, it's like one of those ones where it gives it, it's a nice level of progression because it takes these mythical items, these super powerful items, and makes it so that way you don't need it to finish your build. You do not need it to play your build, but it makes your build better. And it also gives you even more rewarding because you have to work to get it. I don't just let me slam greater rifts for 6 hours to complete this set or to get just a million chances for this item to drop and then go and slam all of my blood shards on one-handed weapons to try and get this thing. You know, I'm out there, like, in Torment 3, because I know that's where it drops, and it has an increased drop chance in the jungles of Halazar that I have to kill this poison snake king cobra boss or whatever, you know, in the middle of the swamp for the highest chance at getting it to drop. Doesn't that feel better? Doesn't that sound better? You know, as far as in terms of like kind of like rewarding gameplay, I think so. You know, I at least think so. But you know, we're going in over an hour now, and so I'll be going through closing out the show on that. Ended with a, you know, started with a rant. That was a little bit on the negative side, ended with a rant that's a little bit on the hopeful side. You know, I'm definitely looking forward to, you know, all the future stuff. I don't know how much longer the Diablo Immortal Alpha is going to last, you know, because we've been a little over a month now. We got a patch and some updates that was cool, some refinement of some systems and some shoring up of error messages and such. Is definitely going and pushing forward. I can't wait until the future when we get to play the Necromancer. That will have me excited in level 60 in whatever in-game PvE content that they have to go through and show. Obviously, there's going to be at some point, you know, we talked about there was that new dev build that got loaded for the Diablo 2 Resurrected. So that's going to have another testing point at some point, which I can't wait to go through and play the Necromancer and see all the great stuff. I know some people have gone through and have kind of like broke the game, you know, and have unlocked a whole bunch of like skill animations and stuff like that. But, you know, they've said that it's not all the animations are done and ready to be shown. So I'll wait and like really dig into it. I've watched all of the videos because I have to see it and I have to know. But I'll wait to hold off on my final opinion until I physically get to play it and see it on my own game, you know, in further stages of testing. We got the Diablo 4 development blog going through coming up, and I don't know, who knows? I got more painting. Oh, so much more painting. God, so much more painting. So look forward to some potential painting streams in the future. I did have fun going through, streaming last week and doing some, paint and chat, complained about work and talked about ghost stories. It was a lot of fun. But if you enjoyed the show and you want to find more, please feel free to go through, follow the show. We stream here every other Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific on twitch.tv/blizzpro. You can find the show on Twitter. We're at the WM Workshop. And then you can find the show on YouTube, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, like the Google Play Podcast, so much other stuff. It's it's out there if you want to find it. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, feel free. Drop me an email, westmarksworkshop@blizzpro.com. If you have any thoughts or ideas, whether they're about the Diablo franchise, about the game, I want to go through, see your thoughts, see your see your content, what it is that you're proud of that you've been doing in Diablo games and such. Drop me a line. Again, that's westmarksworkshop@blizzpro.com. You can also go through, follow me. I'm NineBallGamer on Twitter. I tweet a lot about a lot of different things. Lately, it's been Warhammer as I've been getting ready, getting psyched up for some tournaments. I got a local tournament, that Rogue Trader event going through coming up in a couple weeks in June. And then I've got a fantasy Age of Sigmar tournament that's actually coming to Orlando. It's the big official one from G-Dubs themselves in August, just in time for my birthday. So as soon as I'm done painting my Necrons, well, I'm going to be painting a whole bunch of skeletons or some bed sheets for my ghosts. I'm not quite sure yet. But go ahead, give me a follow over at twitch.tv/nineball. And we'll be talking about Diablo. We'll be painting some models, all other sorts of stuff. But until then, I will catch you all next time.